We're nearing the end of this conversation, and we've just been saying that, well, we need to just do one more thing.
And we're going to talk about historical documentaries, and I think we're going to talk about David Starkey.
Well, I'm very fond, I'm becoming increasingly impressed by him. First of all, I'm struck by how...
Now, which programmes are we talking about?
I mean, he's done a whole succession of shows about the British monarchy.
Yes.
He's done one on monarchy and music, which, of course, interests me very much. Because the music is the music I love. We've got 28 zillion CDs in the room where we're speaking of the sort of music he was talking about. Not only that sort of music, but talking about the role of music in the British monarchy and the part it played. Something I didn't know, which was that in the medieval era, the time of about Henry V, until Henry VIII, British music was as good as anything in the world, apparently. It was thought of as being the best there was. I mean, the king had superb choirs, and there were choirs scattered around in colleges, which originated as basically choir schools, the purpose of which was to glorify God and whoever was in charge of them, whoever had paid for them. And apparently, British music was the business until Henry VIII, who was himself intensely musical, took
a reported to have written
destroyed
Greece,
it. Well, the dissolution of the monasteries also dissoluted a lot of music and music making, and that I got from Starkey. I recently purchased his because I hadn't. Been following it when it originally came out. There were four documentaries about music and monarchy, and I bought the DVDs of that because they repeat them on other channels but in truncated forms, which I don't like. And I also bought the book that he produced in connection with that, which is a whole story with TV as well, which is that originally people feared TV would stop people reading, but of course it actually gives people new things to read about. They read Pride and Prejudice because they've seen it on TV. I read Monarchy and Music by David Starkey and somebody else, some lady academic who assisted him with it, because I watched the show on TV and because I like to read about music.
I probably don't read Agatha Christie novels because I've seen it on TV.
Well, you see the point I'm making, that these things flow together.
I mean, opens up ideas.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
things you could be
interested
in, yeah.
which you explore. I have to say that history documentaries do have a rather, there's something rather annoying about them, which is these actors rather unconvincingly get involved in documentaries, acting out little moments. And I find that...
Oh, yes, what's it called? It's not Amdram, but there is a dramatic reconstruction, yes. I did read an essay once about the difficulties in doing it. I mean, if you are going to make a TV documentary about the Middle Ages, what are your visuals going to be?
Yes.
Because
yes.
You've always got to have one. You've got to have something.
And
for instance, there are precious few images of a whole bunch of monarchs. Henry V, classic example, there's only one image of him.
Yes.
One picture.
Yeah. And also another annoying thing is the way they talk about, I don't know, the Great Fire of London, and we have endless pictures of the Shard and the towers of the city.
But again, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
you've got a few etchings.
Yeah. And well, I tell you what I'd rather have. I'd rather have a history buff with a model of the old city of London saying, quite honestly, look, this is the best we can do to guess what it must have looked like. That I would like to see.
I mean,
but I don't want to see the fucking gherkin again when I'm being told about what happened to the fire in the part of London where the gherkin now is.
I mean, certainly, personally, I would like a lot more honesty about sources. Mm. Honesty about saying, look, we don't have that much information about, say, William II. Yeah, we know where he died, we know a few other things, but actually there are a whole thing, I'm taking him as an example, I don't know, but, you know, these are the sources we don't have. Like, you know, there was no newspaper at the time.
All I can say is that at its best, history documentary on TV does this. It says things exactly like that.
But I've never heard them say that.
I have. I've heard that.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
I agree. It we could do with more of that. Yes. But Stark, what I like is just listening to really good historians talking. I think that's the first.
Well,
there's
a little problem about here, isn't there? Because, I mean, historians are famous for knowing their period and nothing else. So what's Starkey's period? He can't be the whole 1500 year history of the English monarchy. It's got to be.
Well, I think monarchy's a specialism. I mean, he doesn't claim to know as much about medieval agriculture as he does about Henry V. But I think he's a specialist in popularising. I think there's a special role for people who read all the books and summarise them for the likes of me.
But it seems that he can't have got all his opinions from research into the primary sources. He must have read a book by someone else at some point, or got someone else to read.
But how else are we going to have these grand histories?
No, indeed.
If they don't do that.
Indeed.
They get a sense of which historians they trust and they have not caught out playing silly buggers with one of the sources, and they get a feeling from the historical profession, and unlike some, I think history has many different purposes and uses. Part of the disagreement you and I have about what if is that I think is that if that's your question, why not? Why should you not be allowed to ask what if?
I see as counterfactuals, right? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're interested in. If your question about the past is what if the French had thrashed the English at Agincourt, well, it's a perfectly reasonable question to ask, and an expert historian will probably be able to tell you all sorts of things. I mean, the French nobility wouldn't have been slaughtered, etc., etc.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the same token,
I mean, the problem with this is you can only do one or two iterations.
But my point, what I'm leading to, is that another very distinct thing that history does is give us a sense of the grand sweep of history, of all the things that were happening in the world, very sketchily indicated. And somebody like Starkey does that well. Simon Sharma is another one. I think he's a very strong Labourite, so he probably wouldn't like all his opinions. With me, it was a sort of...
Well, I prefer Starkey simply for that reason.
Yes,
because the lies I agree with. Mm. So
when he's on Question Time, he does good stuff.
Does he? Right.
He's been on Question Time a few times, and I think he's said things you and I would both quite like. He's usually on in the right wing, one of the right wing chairs, But I do enjoy history documentaries. I also enjoy documentaries about things like industrial processes, and I think I've already mentioned in a long earlier conversation, the very first of these last week, I've enjoyed Michael Portillo's travelogues because of his discussion of the impact of the railways on British life, which I enjoyed very much.
If I'd known that, I might have watched them. I thought he was just getting on trains, boring old trains, and going to boring old places. But
he stops and talks to people about the development of the fishing industry in Hull, and how the railways opened up a national market for them, that kind of thing, which I think is very interesting. Arguably, I've been saying on behalf of television what others have come around to accepting about the railways, that they, much more so actually than television, they made a colossal impact on the life of every country where they were unrolled. I mean, just colossal. Bigger than television, I think.
Ooh, wow.
Don't you think?
That's
literally being able to go to other places is pretty important, isn't it? Partly because
on television,
preceded,
you can see it without going.
Yeah, but it preceded television. Yeah, they didn't have the alternative of just looking at it. Well, they did vaguely, but not anything like actually going. And I do enjoy Portillo's programmes. I think he was quite clever as a broadcaster, because I think he's rather like a spy who pretends to be a fool. He wears these idiotic costumes or bright purple blazers. And I think his opponent, his political opponents, because don't forget Portillo was a politician, wasn't he? Just thought, oh, we can ignore this. this is not going to count for anything. This is just silly. And I think he blindsided them with his shows. And by the time they realised what a very formidable alternative version of history he was presenting. I mean, Portillo doesn't make a point of being biased, but he made it clear what he thought of Karl Marx when the subject came up.
Golly, and he's still
and deep down, though, there's an even deeper left-wing idea which absolutely spread like ground elder in the early part of the 20th century, which is the belief that industrial progress depended on the continuing existence of war, and that without war there'd be no technological progress. Well, bollocks. It wasn't true before the great wars of the 20th century, and it hasn't been true since. But there was a time when...
Sorry, they meant that in terms of under conditions of capitalism. Capitalism needed war.
There'd be no industrial progress if there were not warriors demanding new weapons. That's what they said. I'm old enough to remember this.
Oh, golly. Right,
yes,
right.
Yes. And the idea that...
And that would apply to them, under the...
I mean, in the early stages of computers, they said, yeah, but the only reason we've got computers is because they wanted computers for controlling nuclear weapons and all that and spying on people. In fact, one of the early applications of computer chips, microchips, was deaf aids. So, they were wrong then. But they were certain that with if you put it this way, if there'd been an outbreak of peace such as we have actually lived through and enjoyed, they would have been surprised by the speed and rapidity of it and just general bazazz of technological development, because they said there's no demand for it. It sounds absurd. Well, it sounds mad, and it is mad.
Yeah.
Of course, it's mad. The idea that war is good for the economy. I mean. Go and jump in a lake and don't come up, as far as I'm concerned. When you say
I mean,
but they did say
that. You
kind
of make a point in that soldiers...
And Portillo, going back to Portillo, he wandered round England talking about technological developments, economic developments, all driven by the fact that somebody in London wants to eat fresh fish, or somebody in Middlesex wants to watch a game of cricket and is prepared to pay. And they've now got trains to bring the teams together and have a national league and all that sort of thing.
But I mean, it's odd how technology works. I mean, sometimes it's demand-driven, but sometimes the demand is technology-driven. I mean, I'm sure there are things that I do on my smartphone that I never thought I would do.
Oh, yeah.
Until it came along.
Yeah, yeah. But you do need that first application driven by people who really, really want it. Old people who want to hear what's being said to them. That's what's good about the deaf aid thing.
Mm.
I mean, that is really, really... I mean, they used to have deaf aids that looked more like ancient gramophones, you know.
Yes.
And then they would have them in little tiny thing in their ear. Oh, what a godsend. What a wonderful thing. And medical technology is still hurtling along, despite the existence of nationalised medicine everywhere. It's constantly improving. I was very struck. I recently went in to get an injection after a long period of good health. And the nurse did a sort of thing on my arm. And I thought, you're preparing me for the injection. Is it going to hurt? She said that was the injection. And I was impressed. I was very impressed. And that's the story you get in more and more documentaries now, because we've lived in a period of peace. We've lived at a time when... The economy is driven by the desire of somebody to go to a pop concert rather than the desire of a soldier to have a rifle which works, or the desire of a general to have a bomb which explodes properly. And so we are now connecting back to the past through their peaceful endeavours. And that has been reflected on television. There are more and more stories about the peaceful arts and the peaceful application of technology to making life more comfortable. There are not only lots of cookery shows, which I don't watch, but there are also shows about history of cookery, because cooking is what people now do a lot of, and they like the idea of hearing about how it was done in 200 years ago. You know, what are the particular history ones I've enjoyed? Now it's Starkey and Portillo are the two I'd pick out, I think. What about you? Do you watch those sort of things, Mark?
I do. I'm a big fan of David Starkey's Molecule.
Which ones do you particularly like? Do you remember? I haven't watched them all yet. I've only watched a few. I'm looking forward to seeing more of them.
I think the point is it tends to be a fairly high standard, a fairly consistent standard the whole way through, which is...
Well, I've never heard him say anything which struck me as just wrong, ever.
No. They're well thought through. And
which ones do you recall with particular pleasure?
I don't recall any.
Any little episodes?
I'm struggling to think of any particular episodes. Mm. Exactly. No, not really. Well, actually, the only thing I really can recall is the very first episode, which starts off with when the Romans disappear from Britain, and he's walking around a Roman castle in Kent, which looks magnificent. You know, 1500 years after it was abandoned, Roman building.
I can remember. I'm old enough to remember. A man who was very famous in his time and has been remembered by broadcasters ever since, and that was the historian A.J.P. Taylor. And his particular skill was walking out into the middle of a TV studio with no notes and no cribs and nothing, just talking, just extemporising about history.
I can remember a programme he gave...
But I don't think it was to be relied upon. I think he said things that were wrong.
No, I think it was garbage. He's not a...
I think the broadcasters admire him more than the historians.
No. Yes, he is more or less being forgotten as a historian. And rightly so.
I can remember being impressed by him as a performer, as were other broadcasters. I particularly... Talking of... history, it's not documentary. I really enjoyed watching the recent Shakespeare productions that they did of Henry IV and Henry V, the two Henry IVs. Especially impressed by Tom Hiddleston, Prince Hal.
This is on BBC One.
BBC Two, I think. BBC2, well, I don't know if it was one or you hardly realise. I think it was two. And they did Richard II, The Hollow Crown, I think they called it. Don't know why. I think because they just cut it a bit. And they did Henry... I haven't watched the Henry VI. They turned Henry VI into two parts. Whereas
it's only three.
It's supposed to be three, I think. Oh. A bit strange. Maybe I got that wrong. I just got the wrong end of it and only recorded the first two and forgot the third one.
They're messing around with Shakespeare, are they? Is that
not much. I mean, it compared to what you sometimes see, it was very faithful. I personally didn't think... Simon Russell Beale was a convincing Falstaff. I thought he was too cunning and rat-like and just not nice enough, not fun enough to be convincing. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing other Falstaffs. I've got a Falstaff of... I don't know if this was ever shown on TV, but a man called Roger Allam, who plays Morse's boss in Young Morse on the TV. He plays Detective Inspector Thursday, I think he's called.
And the General in Parade's End, and I think he was in the thick of it, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. And he's doing Falstaff at the Globe Theatre with an audience, which I think will be very good. I'm looking forward to that. Again, that reinforces the point of how TV just kind of feeds into the culture generally. Gets you thinking about things that maybe aren't on TV, or gets you buying music, or going to things that you wouldn't have done if you hadn't been made to think about it by TV. And vice versa, you watch things on TV because of something you saw. But I do think the history documentaries are interesting. I think in some ways they're an answer to the claim you often hear that young people these days are not being taught history properly. I think there's something about being old that makes you interested in history. That's been my experience anyway.
Well, someone who's interested in history when I was young.
That's the problem, trying to separate those two influences. Just liking history anyway and the impact of old age. I think old age causes you to slightly lose the thread of the world you live in.
Yes.
And you almost take refuge in the past, which is like you're familiar with it, you know where you are, and you can also look out at these teenagers and know that you know it better than they do. And it's comforting.
That's
just nice.
There's something in that. Yeah.